feel right now, I'd probably just say, hi, we had a great time at Sand Valley. Darren and Chris, do you remember it?
You should go. End of show.
Yeah, and then 45 minutes. Yeah. They got a bunch of courses. They're really fun. And you can play barefoot and drink a lot of whiskey with your friends.
So. Right. Here's Tom Petty.
That should be your clip. That should be your clip right there.
Here's Tom Petty.
That's your teaser clip right there.
Right.
So you got a bunch of golf courses. You can drink a lot of whiskey. And
if you eat, sleep, and breathe golf.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Love to explore.
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone and tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun.
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but first rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
It's not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Hello, hello, hello. We are back. Kind of. Welcome to a special edition of Talking Golf Getaways. We, and by we, I mean Darren and Chris and I, have been talking amongst ourselves, which we love to do. But we decided to try to do a few of these not so regularly throughout the year and add them into the rotation on Golf News Net Radio, which you can find on the iHeart Radio platform. It's actually great to be back with you both, Darren Bunch, Chris McEwen.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Although now I'm not so sure. So
it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to reminisce about something fun we did and talk about all the other crazy stuff we've done since. You just got back from Italy.
I did. Yes, I did.
Unbelievable.
And that's how, yeah, I got had a spectacular chance to go with my wife and a bunch of friends to the Ryder Cup at Marco Simone. Spent some time in Rome and in Florence and in Venice. I know Chris's favorite city.
Yeah, do you want me to give my review again of Venice real quick?
Yeah, just give it to me. I literally said, I have been to Rome and Florence before, but the revelation for me was Venice. And you said,
Venice, man.
I want to see that in the list of reviews. All these ones that say I had the greatest of times, right. The canals are amazing, and then Chris McEwen.
Chris saying, I kept getting lost and walking down alleyways that ended in water.
Yeah, it was awful. This is the worst. I told, what really ruined it was I found this incredible coffee shop first day. And I can never find it again because that place is a huge maze and doesn't make any sense. I need a grid system.
Yeah, no, you have to go by yourself at a time when there's no people in Venice. Good luck.
Right. Romans, bro.
Yeah, Romans. But I did have a great time and I was reminded and feel very lucky to have actually been at a Ryder Cup. It's one of the few events in golf that I kind of haven't been to majors, been to tour events. This is other planet stuff on every level. And I loved it. I loved it. And I loved being in Europe for it because I feel like that's the way to do it. Yeah. I think over here, because we're American, it's, you know, obviously what it is, but it's a very different sense. I was sitting on Friday behind the first tee. And, you know, there were 50, 60,000 people on the golf course on Friday. Totally nuts, incomprehensibly nuts. But in the middle of that grandstand, and you've got people all around you from every country. So I was sitting next to, she was probably in her mid-20s, a woman, girl, a golfer who spoke pretty good English. Her boyfriend who spoke no English, who was also Italian. Two guys from Scotland behind me, a group of people from Germany, just everywhere, incredibly respectful. The American guys would hit a good shot. Didn't happen often, but when they did, they'd give them some props. They'd clap, they'd say good shot, whatever. Obviously, when the European guys hit these insane shots, they went completely f-ing bananas.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was. And that's when I realized that first morning in Rome that we had very little chance.
Yeah,
for real. It wasn't about how you play golf. It really wasn't. It was the first time I got a full hit on why we haven't won over there in 30 years. Because it's not about just golf.
Right.
It incorporates so many other things about culture that it's hard to know about it until you really, really, really feel it. And then I heard Paul McGinley talking about it, and he was saying, and he was so emotional about growing up in Ireland and the village and the people and when you get to the Ryder Cup, how literally you're not just playing for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we say it and it's just words, but those guys, and I just, it was really an incredible experience. I won't do it again, mind you, but it was a really unbelievable experience to be there. So I'm grateful. Another kind of golf bucket list thing, other than being with you guys where we were, you know, just checked it off and I'm home safely. So that's nice. Great. And I ate 648 pounds of pasta carbonara.
Mm. Golly, that's good.
Yeah, no, I'm not having pasta for a month. That's the way I can put it. But anyway, so I just got back. You guys have been doing some stuff since this trip to Sand Valley, which we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Darren, you've been a juggernaut. You've been insane.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. When last we spoke on this podcast, I worked for Rams Hill Golf Club. I left there and I moved on to Tobacco Road, one of our favorite places.
You bet.
And which has now been the management has been taken over by Troon. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working with the team at Troon now, and that's very, very fun. And I've done some other traveling as much as my elbow will hold up. I actually go to the orthopedist tomorrow to try to figure out what happened to my elbow. But I did a kind of a cool trip. I went up to Gamble Sands, got a little glimpse of the new golf course up there. I hit Bandon on the way back. I had hit Tetherow on the way up. and then I went and saw Bar Run, where I had worked and helped them a little bit at the very beginning of that project. And I went and saw the final 18 holes that Dan Hixon created there and had a blast playing one morning. So it was a good trip. It was a lot of fun. I realized on that trip when I made an impromptu stop at Tetherow, and I realized there can't be many people in the world who have played Mammoth Dunes, Tetherow, Gamble Sands, the Sandbox at Gamble Sands, and Bandon Dunes in a 2-week stretch.
No.
And that's about what I did. Because we got back and a couple of weeks later I left on this trip. And so, I was kind of all in on David McClay Kidd, which is not a bad thing to be because, you know, we all love him. But I don't think anybody matches that itinerary over a 2 or 3 week span. So put me in the record books on that one.
Well, there must be some kind of award that you get.
I'm sure David has a plaque for me somewhere that he'll hand to me next time I see him.
All right. Well, when you get it, just take a picture so we know that you've gotten your due.
That's right.
That's all I care about. What about Chris? What about you? I know you know, when you have the chance, you like to travel. Where have you been?
Yeah, not a lot. I've been traveling for work. Not nearly as much fun, but I just got back from Michigan, the traditional last golf trip of the year. Now it's been 5 or 6 years running where it's me and 31 other dudes that play a full weekend of Ryder Cup matches. It's a match play 3-day tournament. We play 36 holes a day, and it's one of the highlights of the year. Super fun. Came away with our third championship. So we're basically
nice.
Wait a minute. You won for the what?
Yeah. Third year in a row. My team has come out victorious.
And there are no questions. There are
no inquiries.
Inquiries. Yeah.
We all wore hats because, all accepted the fact that we weren't getting paid. It was voluntary. Twitter didn't make a big deal out of it, so that was good. And we just went out and took care of business.
I guess so.
Yeah. It took me, holy cow. Took me a minute to catch that Ryder Cup reference right there.
Well, I hope, beautiful. I wish you had been over at Marco Simone.
That's where you should have taken your trip there.
I should have.
Although, Sam Box was CNC. No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I said the sandbox, but that's not correct. I said, what the heck's it called up there?
The sandbox.
Quicksands at Gamble Sands.
Oh, Quicksands. Yeah.
Say on that. Yeah,
you
earlier.
Said the sandbox.
I said the sandbox. Yeah. That's so. At Sand Valley. Quicksands at Gamble Sands is what I was talking about on my David McClay Kid thing. Everybody should have already known that.
All right. I didn't want anybody to think you didn't know what you were talking about.
Well,
other than me and Chris,
there's no chance that anybody doesn't think that already.
Sandbox, quicksand. I could see how you'd get those confused. Yeah,
they both say they're both sandy.
Yeah, they both have sand involved.
Yes.
All right. So we've done a bunch of things.
Well, wait. Chris, where'd you play in Michigan?
Oh, yeah. So we play every year. We always do Michigan because it's an Indiana-Illinois group. So that's our meeting spot. We used to do the St. Ives and what's the other one over there?
That is Jim Ng's.
I can't remember what it's called. But we moved to it's a resort called Island Hills. It's in Centerville, Michigan. They have four townhouses on the property. So once you park your car, you're done driving for the next 4 days, which is awesome. We just take golf carts everywhere. It's a fantastic, the reason that we've settled, not settled, but we've decided to stay there is because it's probably the best match play golf course, in the Midwest. It's just perfectly set up for match play. Yeah. Because we do the alt shot and we do the four ball and we do those sort of traditional Ryder Cup formats, but then we also do some scramble, and there are holes there on probably two or three on each front and back on each nine, where if your playing partner's safe, you can really make a run at it. You know what I mean? Some really gettable par fours, some really gettable par fives. And so it's so much fun. And it's a kind of a combination of links and, tree lined Parkland style, nine. So it's a really fun golf course.
Island Hills isn't the casino, is it?
There might be one. It's not on property. No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I was trying to
there might be one nearby, but yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But it's a great spot. We've been going there for years and years and years. They take great care of us. Can't recommend it enough.
Also had my Ryder Cup, match this week with the event that I do here on the coast every year. And we've documented the Bummage Smoys Cup. Well, Jason Moyes, former guest on this show, no longer lives in California. So we've kind of changed up the teams. And but we did one of those cool formats that where we changed the format every six holes the other day.
Oh, wow.
And it came down to, I think we lost on the 17th hole. So we don't need to talk about that, in the same way that we don't need to mention Joe Sass. I know. We don't need to mention Joe Sass and his role in this Sand Valley trip beating me like a drum the entire time. I'm glad he's not even on this podcast.
Oh, that Joe Sass. Yeah. Yeah. You mean the one we had Chris and I had a little statue of made? That Joe Sass?
If we made a statue of Joe Sass wearing a visor, but in the Payne Stewart motion, that would be the best thing ever.
It'd be perfect.
I got to find somebody who will sculpt that for us.
And every year we'll have the two of you play for it and we'll go someplace cool. I think
if I win and I win that statue, that it's not really like winning, is it?
Well, you just have a little interchangeable face, one of you and one of Joe, and then so you just put whoever wins on the
kind
face.
Kind of a makeshift bobblehead. You just replace the head year to year.
Right. Exactly right.
When I win the Powerball, that is what is getting billed first right there. Getting that commissioned.
That's funny. All right. We're going to get to the actual purpose of this wonderful discussion now. But first, I want to remind you, I'm Mitch. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E on Twitter, at Mitch_Lawrence1 on Instagram. He's Darren. You can find him at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram, or, as he mentioned, behind the scenes at the spectacular, the perfect, at Tobacco Road Golf on the social medias. And Chris, who we used to say he was behind the glass. That's an old showbiz term because that's usually where the production guy would sit. And Chris is doing that. I don't think he has glass in front of him.
He's got glass somewhere in his house, though.
Well, in the house, but he's not behind it, or else he'd be out in the cold in Chicago.
Right.
But he is also obviously on this side of the glass because we're talking to him. So yes. None of those apply here. But also, I'm going to let him tell you where you can find him because we have an extra 10 minutes to discuss his media empire. And right. Darren and I can't tell you all the places you find him. So well, tell us, Chris.
It's at Chris McEwen across the socials, Chris with a K, and at That Range Life on the YouTube. You can find me there. Yeah.
The YouTube.
It should be the your tube.
It's a Chicago thing because we put the in front of all kinds. We put the in front of the grocery store. So instead of like Jewel, we say the Jewel. Instead of Target, we say the Target. So yeah, YouTube, the YouTube.
Okay, yeah, that so. Makes me want to move to Chicago even more now, I swear.
You got to get over to the Jewels, get some apples. Let's go full south side.
Is there no more Origin Story?
Origin Stories is on a prolonged hiatus. I'm trying to decide what I want to do with it. I started up another project with our pal Adam from Golf Unfiltered, doing a little bit of kind of stealing your guys' idea around golf travel.
Right.
Called Have Clubs, We'll Travel. So we're starting.
Wait a minute. Darren, right. Did you know that?
Kick him off the podcast
right
now.
Don't we have a patent on talking about golf travel? Has that lapsed?
No, you don't, because now I have it. So this is my show.
Damn it.
It's my plan all along.
Damn it. You wormed your way in and then rode away.
That's right.
Golly, I'm going to regret the day I called you and said, edit this for me, please.
You motherfucker.
But yeah, that's what's going on these days. That's where I am.
Beautiful. All right. That's all good. And we're happy for you. Not. Okay. So we start off always drinking our favorite beverages in hand. I am drinking because it's now, as we record, 1:35 in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I feel like my body is saying, no, it's 7:35 in Rome.
Yeah.
And I right. feel like I should be eating more pasta and having some wine. But instead, I'm having a glass of Larceny Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey in honor of my brother, Matt, who lives in Lexington, Kentucky. So, Darren, what'd you say? Canadian Maple Whiskey Sortilage, or is it early? It's got to be
I have a bottle of it sitting here, but I have not dove into it because, as you mentioned, here on the West Coast, it's only 10:35.
Yeah, so what has that stopped us?
So what I actually have, you're going to like this. Listen to this sound. Can you hear the fizziness?
Yeah.
I can. I have my own homemade bougie water.
No.
In memory of Chris that I'm going to drink right now.
Wait, homemade bougie water. So you have like one of those bubble makers?
I got a soda stream, yeah.
Yeah. The, okay.
I think they're called bougie stills.
Right. Right.
Well, so if you're a real man, you'd pour some of that sortilage into the bougie water.
Yes. Well, come that on. May happen. We've already talked for 30 minutes or something like that.
So right. Well, like, whatever. Okay.
I am team bougie with Chris today.
Hell yeah.
Well, happy for you.
I've got some nice flavored CBD water.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
That would help my elbow.
Exactly.
I think you should just pour it all over your elbow. Just rub it in.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Let's get going here. This is it's interesting that Darren mentioned all the trips he's been on to Bandon and Gamble, because the reason that we really, really want to talk about what we're going to talk about today, which is Sand Valley, it's going to focus on what I was trying to figure out a good name for these golf destinations. And what I came up with, see if you agree with me, is pilgrimage golf destinations.
Ooh, I like that.
In the country.
I like that.
Because these are places, trips you take that require actual effort and planning. real effort planning. Luckily for us, we're golfers. You can go to a course that's near you, be there in 15 minutes. But these are the special ones. They're worthy of our time and effort. In this case, Sand Valley, beautiful, remote, capital R, Nakusa, Wisconsin. And we got to come together this summer. And I realize it's a little after the summer now. But I think all of us had to take a little while to fully digest the magnitude of the experience we had there.
No doubt about that.
We're a little bit late, but we're getting to it. And for any time I get to do this, it's a trip of a lifetime for me. Because to me, there's nothing better than being in a place like this with people that you really, really like, except for Darren, and get to share the time and the golf and everything that goes along with us. So this place, Sand Valley, obviously, I would think that people have heard about it, but just as a quick recap, it was originally known for its two 18-hole courses, the Core Crenshaw original Sand Valley and the David McClay Kidd designed Mammoth Dunes, plus the fun Core and Crenshaw imagined sandbox 17-hole short course. Can you see me smiling right now when I say sandbox?
Beautiful.
The Kaiser family, who were known for Bannon Dunes, and I would say the original pilgrimage destination. Not that there aren't other places that have a couple of good courses, but what the Kaisers did at Bannon Dunes, which everybody told them they were crazy to do and absolutely insane, that has set the standard for places yes. like Sand Valley.
Yep.
I don't care who builds them. That's the standard. So they added another, as if Sand Valley and Mammoth Dunes weren't enough, and for a lot of people they would be, but they added an unbelievable ode to history with what I think is one of the most interesting places I've ever played golf in over 40 years, which is the Lido course. And when I say it's one of a kind, it is literally one of a kind. There is no place like it. Originally designed on Long Island in New York by C.B. McDonald in 1917, and we'll talk about this in a little while because I think it's worth getting into what they did there. And then also because the menu apparently for the Kaisers wasn't stacked enough, Sedge Valley, the new course, Tom Doak's course, is on its way next season. So they just keep going. And after having been there, I know the three of us feel the same way, which is not only is there this incredible base now at Sand Valley, which is only going to expand, but it's the perfect destination. There's so much land there. I can see them over the years just coming up with other stuff. I don't think it's contained. It's not like they're going to build a wall around what they have.
Right. Yeah.
No, they're going to keep building, you know, whatever they can in terms of more golf and more interesting golf. I think that's the biggest thing. And you kind of hit on it there is the golf is so varied. And it's so interesting. And I would argue that it may have elevated itself to the number one golf resort in these golfing United States of America because I love Bannon. I just came back from Bannon, as we mentioned, and Bannon is doing the same thing, building more and more and more and more. But it's a shorter season at Sand Valley. It's right there. You know, it's remote, but it's fairly close to, Chicago and the other bigger cities there in Wisconsin and that type of thing. So it can draw people. And the weather is more stable during the summer.
Yep.
At Bandon, you just never know what you're going to get weather-wise. I happened to get great weather when I was there, but you can also go in the middle of the summer and get, you know, sideways rain and craziness. So, you know, I think it's, what they've done is they've learned from everything they've done, the Kaiser family, and they've poured it all into Sand Valley, and it's becoming almost this perfect getaway that if you were going somewhere for 4 or 5 days, it's got to be, if it's not number one on the list, it's at least in the top three of a place you got to go.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with it. I'm sure Chris does too. I mean,
yeah, I think the variation too that they're continuing to build on is really, it's like front and center for me. I mean, the vibe of the place is unparalleled, in my opinion. But just the fact that you can play so much different golf there is just, it's a blast.
Yeah, because the Coral Crenshaw course and the Dave McClay Kid course are worlds apart in the way they feel.
Yep.
You know, I remember something, I don't remember the story exactly, but when it came time to build Mammoth, when David McClay Kid signed on, he said, okay, I want to do it, but I need, and I'm going to get the number wrong, I'm sure off the top of my head, but he told the Kaisers, I need 30% more grass than the Sand Valley course had. And the Sand Valley course is already pretty wide and generous in the landing areas in a lot of ways. And then McClay Kid just put that on steroids, you know, and built it even crazy wider. And some people like that, some people don't, whatever. We love it. We think that kind of design that allows you to go different angles and attack from different ways is super fun. It's why I love Gamble Sand so much as well. But they built those two. Then Coral Crenshaw came in and built this 17-hole short course that, you know, you can play out there in bare feet. We'll talk about that, you know. But then you get the Lido, which is this one-of-a-kind thing that, you know, nobody ever thought might come back and be in a real form that people could go play. And it's, you know, open to rave reviews. And this Tom Doak thing that people are saying might be the best one of them all.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shorter course. It's more of what I understand is more of a quote unquote player's course. I don't know what that exactly means. But we got hints of it and Mitch got to drive around on a little bit with Clark. We'll talk about Clark. But you just hit those four plus the short course and you have, you know, gone the full gamut of golf as it should be played. And you're going to find something in there that you love the most. It's going to end up being like Bandon, where we talk about all the time that if you ask people to rank all the Bandon courses, you're going to get a different order every time from people. And this is going to be the same. And the lodging, which we're going to talk about, all the other things that they've added to this resort that they've learned from and they've continued to build, just make it an absolutely phenomenal property. And I find myself thinking about it, you know, pretty much every day since we've left, you know, and just thinking, well, we've got to have more of these, it feels like. And I think we're getting there in the industry with other places that are trying to build. Obviously, Doak's building the new Pinehurst exit at Pinehurst. Gamble has another course coming with theirs. We're getting more and more. Abandon's about to. I saw a glimpse of the second short course Abandon when I was there. So we're getting more and more of these, and I just think it's so great for golf, and just makes it just so much fun to not only talk about but just to go do.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I didn't know how long you were going to go on there.
I don't know. I'm passionate about it.
I think Sand Valley elicits that kind of response. I really do. Yeah, I know, Darren, you'd been there before.
Yes.
Chris, I can't remember. Was that the first time or multiple times?
Second time.
Okay.
Second time.
So it's an interesting perspective because you both have been there before and this was my first time. And I'd heard so much about it, obviously. To me, the fact that you both, the multiple visits reinforce what you felt the first time, to me, says just about everything. That's why Bandon was so special to me, because it wasn't just going once. It was when you go back again, mm-hmm. another time and a third time, and you come away feeling, I didn't think I could love this place more, but I do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what they're creating now. And that, if you want a business template, hello.
I think for me too, I've been to a lot of places, you know, more than 100 hotels and resorts. I've, you know, played 500 something golf courses now or whatever it is. But these days I'm looking at it not just as a traveler anymore, but also as a golf course operator. And I'm just in awe of the attention to detail and what they did at Sand Valley more than anything else in just creating a customer experience that you just feel like, man, I was born to be here and I want to just live here the rest of my life if I could.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Just real quick, and we'll get into this too, but they don't, to that point, they don't rest on their golf course laurels. Like, it's enough. It would be enough to roll out those golf courses and be like, have at it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what they also do then is they make you feel like you're the biggest, most important person on the property all the time. You know, yep. they don't gouge you in places where a lot of other resorts will gouge you. They're just like always happy to see you no matter what. It's really, they got it down for sure.
Yeah. And that doesn't just extend to the little details I think Darren's talking about. It's the people.
Yeah.
And the kind of culture that they have there so that it extends. We had a couple of things happen. I had one thing happen, which maybe I'll go into later, but there were two distinct people on the property that went out of their way doing something that at other places might have just passed them by for me mm-hmm. without blinking an eye. And I mean, not only fast, but great attitude. And, you know, it kind of touches on what you say, Chris, about it's a culture there. Yep. And it's not, those aren't just words. It's not a cliche. It literally is how you feel there.
Yes.
Which is pretty remarkable considering how crowded it was when we were there.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it blew me away when I first walked up to the, you know, to meet you guys, and I was sitting there and I looked around and it's not easy to get to. It's not, you know, on the lower end of cost. There's all these things. And I mean, there were just golfers everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere.
Right.
And there, you know, there were families, there were little babies up there. I was blown away from the first minute I got there.
And yet it never feels like you're jammed in there.
Right.
It doesn't feel like a machine, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. a golf travel machine, like I've heard people describe, you know, other big mega resorts and things like that. The other thing from a you know, detail standpoint and making you feel at home is the genius that they had that nobody else has duplicated. And not even Bandon does this. But the price at Craig's Porch, which is kind of the original little, you know, house starter shack and little place to get a bite to eat for the original Sand Valley course. And this dates all the way back to when they opened it. Dollar tacos, $3 beers.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Yep. And, you know, we always talk about from an operator standpoint, from a marketing standpoint. First of all, from a marketing standpoint, it's genius because it doesn't matter what else happened to you that day. You know, you're going to talk about, hey, I got dollar tacos and $3 beers. You know, where else does that happen? So that from a marketing standpoint. But the other thing is, they're probably getting that money back somewhere, you know, as Mitch mentioned, this is not an inexpensive trip. And we get that. We talk about all the time, you know, there are some places that only people who are well enough off to make it happen are going to make it happen, or people have to make it a trip of a lifetime, you know, and just save up for this one trip. And then we talk about a lot of affordable golf that's out there as well. But they're probably getting that money back in the greens fees and the lodging and all that kind of thing. So they're able to do this. But the fact that you just talk about it nonstop and the one on Mammoth Dunes that's kind of off while you're playing the round and you stop at the mm-hmm. snack shack, same thing, incredibly low price to grab your snacks and your beers and whatnot. It's just, it's fantastic. I think most people couldn't believe they did it when they did it. And it's just a talking point nonstop. And every time I'm there, I'm just amazed that they continue to do it. And it's just fantastic. It's one of the truly unique things.
Yep. I heard you talk about this, Darren, and I was going, okay. And then when you get there, and it's not just tacos and beer. It's, you know, you go up to that window and you say, I want that and I want that and I want that and I want that. And I'll have one of those. And then they go, that'll be $6.
Right. Exactly. And
I swear I looked at them like, okay, nobody told you there'd be math? Because that's wrong.
Yeah.
But it's true. Yep. That's a great,
I don't remember what the ice cream sandwiches cost us, but that's the other, you know, thing that they've hung their hat on since the very beginning is having ice cream sandwiches. Although they've changed the company they get them from, but they're still fantastic and just good. So good that on that day they almost ran out. So we had to get our ice cream sandwiches when the getting was good. You know, so that we would get them. So,
and luckily we did. All right, let's just touch on quickly, because I thought this was interesting too. We took different paths to get to Sand Valley. Darren, you mentioned that it's remote but accessible, and I think it's a great way to put it. Chris came from Chicago. You drove.
Yep.
Yeah. And how far is it in terms of a drive?
It's not that bad. It's like a 3-hour drive, probably.
Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. I came from Myrtle Beach, so I had to fly to Milwaukee, two flights through Atlanta and then Milwaukee, and that took a little time. And then the drive from Milwaukee was about 2.5 hours, I would say. But again, the whole time, Darren and I have talked about this before, Chris too, about building excitement for these kinds of trips, which happens on the day you travel. Yeah, I had all that time to know where I was going, and I couldn't wait to get there. So
yeah.
I loved that part of it. And once I got to Milwaukee and got the car, then I'm turning up the music. I am blasting it. I'm looking at countryside I've never seen. And when you hit that turn into Sand Valley with that sign, it felt great. It really did. I was so grateful. I was just like, it was over the top. Gratitude on my end. Darren, you and the aforementioned Joe Sass.
Yep.
You know,
we did it differently. We flew into Minneapolis.
Right.
We went to see our friend Eric Hart, and who is running a golf course called Wild Marsh outside Minneapolis, doing a fantastic job there. So we went there and played with him and his son Dylan for a day, and then hit the road. And then we hit Lac La Belle, which is a Craig Haltom designed golf course, along the way, and then drove in from that area. So it was kind of a 2-day trip for us with a lot of golf. We played 36 holes each day before we even got there to you guys. We were the same way, you know, just constantly talking golf the whole trip. Aside from Joe hitting a bobcat with our rental car and taking out the front solar panel or whatever it's called, we had an absolute blast doing it that way. And then we turned around and drove back to Minneapolis for the flight home, because we had to drop off the car. So there's so many different ways you can do it. And I think it's like you're saying, the anticipation for any of these places, Sand Valley, Bandon, Gamble, Cabot, when we go up there, you know, that is the thing. And that's just another element of these, what did you call them? Pilgrimages, mm-hmm. We make. And I feel the same way, you know, even like Tobacco Road, Pinehurst, that area, you're flying to Raleigh, Durham and do the same thing. So it's an overlooked part of a golf trip that, I don't think gets mentioned enough.
Yep. All right. So once you get there, we all get there. And then if you've been there, you have an idea. If you haven't, like me, I knew because of our planning that we had a place that we were all going to stay together, a house, and that just means a house until you get to the house. And I know this is going to change because of the expansion at Sand Valley, and I'm sure there's planning on all kinds of different accommodation possibilities. But for the time being, one of the options, which is the one we chose, there are people who own these houses at Sand Valley, and like an Airbnb or anything else, you can have it for the time you're there. And you set that up, Darren. And, when we got there, I just couldn't, I was going, okay, this is beyond great.
Yes.
I mean, the house really was something off the charts.
It's funny. I mean, first of all, it was when we booked, and we booked well in advance, it was one of the only lodging options there was. Mm-hmm. And we had already agreed amongst ourselves, the four of us, you know, are fortunate to be doing the things we do. And we had agreed that the money we would bite the bullet and pay up, you know, to do the things that we wanted to do on this trip and to really make it memorable. So the house was one of the only options left. And 4-bedroom house, full kitchen. It had a large living room with a TV. It also had a screened-in porch, you know, for the smokers or people who want to sit outside. And then it also had the outdoor area that was all sandy, and it was built around a man-made lake. And so, you know, at which Chris and I went kayaking on the lake.
I did too. Yep.
Oh, that's right. You did too.
I did.
And the makeup of the house was brilliant, because you basically come in, you take a right turn, and it's just 4 of these bedrooms, each with their own bath, you know, as good as you can possibly hope for. And then you make a left and you get, you know, the rest of this house to enjoy. It is not inexpensive, as we said. It'll run you anywhere from $200 to $400 a night per person, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to figure that into what you're doing. But it is completely memorable. It spoiled me for everything else.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, I want to just do this every time I go stay anywhere, any place. You know,
well, I just wanted to live there.
Yeah. Especially
if I could stay there. Yeah, I just wanted to live there.
Especially when you're traveling with a foursome. It was perfect for a foursome. Yep. And I can't recommend it any higher than we already have. It's as good of accommodations as I've ever found. And I've stayed in some pretty cool places, obviously.
You know, it was great too. You know, it was great too to me. When sometimes, and especially without actually seeing it first, you can find a place that says 4 bedrooms on a lake, and they'll give you words and some pictures, but a lot of times you don't have the space. Once you get there, it's not quite the space you imagine. This space was absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how much room there was in this, so that everybody, you feel really comfortable just kind of being together, but also having your own space.
Yep. And a lot of entry,
all the way around.
A lot of entryway space. So when you come in, there's a place to put your golf clubs, you know, put all that kind of stuff. So you're not having to lug them back and forth into your room and whatever. And then you basically take golf cart, you know, or drive your car back and forth, or the shuttle will come pick you up. When we went to Lido, the shuttle came right to our house there, and then took us across the street to the Lido. So, they've really figured that out. The refrigerator came stocked with frozen pizzas and ice cream, I think it had in it. We of course brought all of our own sortilage and every other beverage we could think of.
Yeah.
And we brought food, because one of the nights we did, we put Joe to work, as our grill master, but not the best grill master of the trip, because that was reserved for really, something else that we did that was, another one of those all-time experiences that I've never thought to do before, and I will do it every time I'm there now.
Well, let's just talk about that for a second. So we get these emails. Darren had set up the trip and then handled a lot of the details. So Chris and Darren and Joe Sass and myself, we get an email at one point, and we already thought, okay, we're spending some money here. There's no question.
Right.
But we've pretty much done, we've booked everything we thought we could book at Sand Valley. Right. But to show you how much they think outside that particular box, Darren sends us an email and says, okay, what do you think of this idea? How about one of the nights we have our own grill master and steaks? And I literally remember opening that email and laughing completely out loud. Because I thought, what are you even talking about? Personal grill master come to your house? This is just sick. So of course we all agreed, which I'm so happy we did.
And let me say why, one of the reasons why, not just because it was a fantastic thing that we've never tried before. And I was honestly, when I pitched it to you guys, I was like, I told my wife, I said, I'm going to pitch this to these guys. And if they don't want to do it, I'm just going to do it anyway. And I'm going to pay for it all myself, because
you tell us
that's how cool it was. But part of the reason why we did it was a logistical thing, that when you're playing 36 holes a day
and
your last round is late, you know, like we were going off almost last out on 2 of the days, mm-hmm. and you, it's very difficult for you to get back to your place. You know, everybody showers up and everything, and then get to one of the actual eateries, you know, before they're stopping serving or whatever. So it just made more sense that we have this house. We're paying big money for the house. Let's cook there.
We have a grill.
Right. Let's cook there two of the nights. And it just ended up making perfect sense. And that's why we did it that way. So.
And it was perfect. So they literally come to your house fully prepared with what you order. Everybody puts in their order and what they want. And to our house arrives this wonderful woman, all ready to go. We would tell you her name, but we've decided among us that we are forevermore, because of how fantastic she was, simply going to call her the grill mistress. And that's it. But she was unbelievable. Great personality, obviously really good at what she did, and the meal was fantastic.
Oh, it was so good. I mean, Chris, talk about it, but first off, go ahead, Chris, give us your opinion on this.
Well, yeah. So you get to select your menu, right? So that you have different choices. I think we all end up going with steak.
Well, yeah, it was steak. You had four different choices of steak.
Right.
And I believe one of them was a porterhouse. Like none of us got the porterhouse.
Yeah.
But I was looking at this and it's all the same price. So you pay a price for the grill mistress and then you pay whatever the cost per person is on this. And I don't recall. Again, it seemed like it was not that out of whack with what we would spend if we went to a good steak restaurant and got alcohol and all that stuff. In this case, we're supplying our own alcohol, so that part didn't matter. But obviously, most of us got the filet. I think somebody got a ribeye. But the porterhouse was on there. And then there was just all the fixings. I mean, we had baked potatoes and corn and I want to say asparagus.
Asparagus,
She brought a fruit and charcuterie plate that she got all going before we did anything. She made a little salad, whatever. And she was the nicest person as well. She was just one of the gang. It was like having a fifth person in our group. She's John with us while she's out there grilling. And we're just all, you know, out there basically like, you know, just a-holes letting the woman do the cooking while we're sitting out drinking Sieur de Loge with our meat kicked up on the beach of this private lake. But, you know, that's what you do. Be a man. Let's do it.
What I really appreciated about it, I think Mitch and I probably had a moment just sitting at the table and Tom Petty's playing on the speaker and we're sharing this meal together. And just you talk about, it's one thing to go to the restaurants that are on the property and sit and have a meal and you're with, you know, other people, whatever, but having it just be the four of us, you know, with this decadent meal that was made for us, that was prepared for us, and just kind of hanging out. And I don't know, it was just a good thing. You know, it just gave me this overwhelming sense of appreciation that you're there, these people are with me. These are my friends. And, I don't know. It was just one of those things where you had to kind of pinch yourself. Like, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe that we're having this great meal in this place at this resort. And, I don't know. It was one of those things that just really struck me as significant.
The only thing that was served on that menu was gratitude.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Mitch.
No, that's a great way to put it, Chris, because we all felt that way.
It felt like hanging with your boys on 4th of July. That's kind of what it felt like. It was that kind of just we're all here. We're buddies. We've been playing golf. That's the other thing, man. I mean, spend this time, you know, we're recounting the round. We're talking, you know, we're doing all the stuff that you do on a golf trip. But without the hassle and logistics of having to get all gussied up and go, you know, up to the resort or whatever. And I mean, I would add it every time at Sand Valley. at least one night.
100%.
And then, like we said, we did essentially the same thing, but with burgers. Joe and I had gone shopping the day before we got there. Well, on the way to Sand Valley. And we had bought our own fruit and burgers and buns and I wish we had run a camera on that entire shopping trip, because
the texturing was just top notch. It's just, well, it's like, amazing. Just amazing.
We were at a Piggly Wiggly, and the first aisle we went down was like the discount aisle. And we didn't realize there were other aisles. And so we're like, well, I guess we'll get this off-brand ketchup and this off-brand buns. And then, you know, a couple minutes later, we get into the other aisles and we go, oh, we didn't have to buy all the off-brand stuff. So we take all that stuff back. At one point we had hot dogs, hamburgers, sausages, and buns for all of those things and all the fixings. And finally we looked at each other and we're like, what the hell are we doing? We're not going to eat that much food. So then we're trying to decide what to put back. And then we're like, well, we need some fruit. So I just go over and grab a pre-done fruit thing. And when Joe goes to check out, the price of the fruit thing was like $35 or something like that.
Joe was so offended. He was so offended by the whole thing.
I come walking back up after grabbing something else, and Joe goes, your fruit thing's $35, man. Do we really need that much fruit? And I'm like, I didn't even look at the price, Joe. I just grabbed the fruit I wanted. So then we had to take that back and get smaller, cheaper fruit. It was a comedy show all of itself that we should have.
I don't know if that phrase has ever been used. Smaller, cheaper fruit.
Yeah. God, well, that's so funny, though.
Smaller, cheaper fruit.
That's what it was.
The play-by-play by Joe was in the group chat was fantastic.
But the beautiful thing was, you know, and Joe wanted to run the grill that second night. And again, we did the same thing. We just hung out and talked and listened to music and watched the sunset, which was fantastic. Sunsets over that little lake were just absolutely killer. The lake was just on the other side of the lake. We actually threw the drone up in the air and we could point the drone one direction, and across the road you could see the Lido. And you point it the other direction, you could see the farthest out holes of Mammoth Dunes. Yeah. And it, just the positioning of it and everything was just, it was heavenly.
Yeah, it's great. It
really All was. Right,
let's move on from the food chat. And we're going to get to actually talk about the golf. We've been talking. We haven't even talked about the golf.
Well, we kind of did.
let's just start. Let's quickly start with just thoughts on Sand Valley and Mammoth Dunes. I'm going to start since it was my first trip. I already knew that I was expecting Mammoth Dunes, that I would love Mammoth Dunes based on our conversations with David McClay Kidd. We knew kind of what went into him creating that course. We had never talked to, you know, Ben Crenshaw or Bill Corr about it. So I think David had a leg up in that area. We played Sand Valley first. And I really, really liked it. I'll say that. Because it's Corr and Crenshaw. It's not like you're going to play a course and go, well, this sucks.
Yeah, terrible.
But it had for me, and a lot of this too is where, like all these places, it's where your game is. You know, what kind of game you have at the time you're there. Mine is not great. I've had a bunch of physical stuff going on. A couple years older than both of you and Joe. I'll just leave it there. So my kind of game, to certain courses, I have more trouble playing. There's a lot of elevation change. There's a lot of, you're hitting shots into greens that are really elevated. And so all that made the course itself a little bit tougher for me to play. Obviously, we're going to just check off people I was with, the time, the fun, all that stuff. I'm just talking pure golf course.
Sure.
So we played Sand Valley, really liked it, beautiful, some great holes. Moved over to Mammoth Dunes, and everything I thought about Mammoth Dunes was true. All that I expected and more. I love the whole philosophy behind having a course that tends to try to help you as opposed to present challenges that are often too much for most golfers. And that day at Mammoth Dunes for me, as far as the 18 holes, was that was the top for me of the 18 hole experience. It's got so much going for it. Thought, strategy, beauty, beautiful landscape, and what David did there with it, to me, was off the charts. So Mammoth Dunes, to me, of the two, was my favorite.
I love
Chris.
So I share that. So Mammoth Dunes, since the moment I played it, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years ago, became my favorite golf course I've ever played, and it's still there. And I can't imagine it'll be replaced anytime soon. It is just it's a mid handicapper's dream layout. Right. Which is what I am. So if you run into one every once in a while, you can have some fun with it, you know, and you actually do hit your spot. But for a lot of us that don't do that very consistently, there's enough golf course where it's not super penal. You always have a chance to make the next shot. Mm-hmm. It might be a little more difficult than the, you know, if you would have hit your spot. But man, it is so much fun. That golf course is just so much fun on a golf course where you can't look away. Like, you know, it's fun to hit a drive and then do the quick tee swoop and, you know, strut back to your bag. And like, yeah, I got all that one. You can't do that at Mammoth. You have to watch your ball because you could end up, you know, maybe it's a 350 yard par four. You could end up on the green.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like but you did once.
Right. Yeah. Which I, you know, and then I've left my eagle putt short like a chump, but it still leaves a mark. But anyways, it's one of those where it's just so much fun because you don't know necessarily, you know, even your bad shots, right? Your bad shots, the way that McClay Kidd designed that thing, your bad shots could still
can be okay.
Yeah. Find a place where you're like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I still got to look. And that's even before you get to the greens, which are some of the funnest greens I've ever stepped foot on. Like those things are just a blast. They're just so much fun, just so much fun. And it's going to require you to hit some shots. Like if you want to score, you still have to hit some shots.
Definitely.
But it's just so much fun. And it is an easier walk too, I think anyways.
Definitely easier. You know, for me, I've been having all that back trouble. So I had to get a medical exemption to get a cart.
Right.
Because there was no way I could walk.
Right.
And they were great about that, too. That was another thing I should just quickly mention, that it's part of that culture we were talking about. I just had to, you know, I had to get a doctor's note, essentially, which is not hard. Especially in my case, I have enough, you know.
You've got all the doctors on payroll. I'm giving them
the documents if they want it.
Right.
But they were great about it. They were very accommodating and easy about all that. And the only regret I have in all this, and you guys know this, is walking is what I love most about playing.
Yeah.
So it really was hard to not be able to walk, except for the sandbox, which we'll talk about.
Right.
Yeah. But for those courses, I'm hearing you, it is more walkable than Sand Valley.
Yeah.
So that was another great part.
Yeah. And Sand Valley, kind of same to your point, it's far more difficult and penal, and there's far more force carries. I'm thinking back, remember the par three where Mitch's caddy told us, you know, hit, I think it's seven maybe on Sand Valley. Anyways, I hit the perfect tee shot. Perfect.
Oh, yeah. The elevated par three.
I hit a faded 9-iron into the spot. And where did that thing end up? At the bottom of that green, like way down.
Yeah.
Just because it defends itself much more than I mean, it's almost like a 180, like the way that Sand Valley defends itself, the greens specifically defends itself.
It has nods of, you know, classic architecture, like we're going to talk about with the Lido. With those kind of domed greens and spots that really make you, there's a couple holes on that front nine that really make you have to do something, you know, have to hit a shot. Otherwise you are going to test your short game.
Right.
But it has other holes that you get away with that stuff, a lot easier. So it's kind of, I find it interesting. You know, I played Sand Valley the first trip I ever took, with Eric Hart and Dylan, there was only Sand Valley, and I was hooked from the start. I've always liked that golf course. I agree with you that it's definitely harder. But I really enjoy the progression, I guess, of a round. Mm-hmm. And when I think the 16th, 17th, and 18th, the closing stretch is absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
You know, you've got this long dog leg left that if you don't hit it far enough, you will not have a look at the green around this corner. The 17th is almost an Alps-like par three that you hit into this hidden bowl and you just don't know. You might have 2 feet. You might have 25, 30, 40 feet based on how the ball comes off the slopes and the swales. And then the 18th, you know, some people I've heard, you know, if there's a criticism of it, it's that, you know, after this walk, you're walking up this hill, you know, on this long par five. But I just think the strategy on that hole is so good. And then you're hitting, you know, right into this green below Craig's porch where people are sitting up there in the Adirondack chairs, you know, eating their dollar tacos and their ice cream sandwiches and watching and sometimes heckling you as you're trying to make your putts. There's a huge bunker down the right side that is super fun to play out of. Brian Orr probably doesn't feel that way because I remember a match that came to an end with him just basically having to set up camp in that bunker for the rest of his life. But I love Sand Valley. I've loved it from the beginning. Like you said, Mammoth is so different. It's much more kid-like. It's much more, it'll allow you to get away with more. Although if you find the wrong side of slopes, I mean,
yes,
David McClay Kidd is very much a Lynx golf designer, and you know, the luck of the bounce, can help you, but also can put you in some tough spots as well. So, you know, I always think of that. What I find interesting about both courses, and this will be the last thing I say on it, but both courses have holes that I want to go back and conquer. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like I walk off either one on any given day and I think, God, I wish I played that hole better or this hole better. The hole we talked about, I don't remember the number, but the hole where you drove the green, you know, I should have been able to drive that green with the hickories, with the way the wind was and from the tees we were playing on that day. And we played it twice. And both times I hit tee shots that didn't pan out. And I think about it every day. I want to go back. I want to hit that shot over and over and over again, because I know I can hit that green. I know I can make birdie or almost eagle on that hole. And it haunts me. And there are holes on both of the courses that do that to me. And I think that's the mark of a great golf course. And that's why I think they're both fantastic and such a great 1-2 punch, because they're so different. They're such a changeup.
And that's a great point. I mean, the 1-2 punch of it is a great point. And especially if, and I think this is the way to do it, which is what we did, is when you play them out of the gate. You know, you don't, not that the other courses won't draw you in, but when you play them in that order.
Yeah.
And you have those two as the first thing, because the next opportunity that we had was the sandbox.
Right.
And after... Because both Mammoth and Sand Valley, they're big boy golf courses and big girl golf courses. You know, they're not, there's so much of them. And then to come from that, and I think we all agree, I think we all love what's happened with short courses.
Yes.
You know, the availability of major league world designers not throwing that off, but going, okay, now we're going to create the preserve, and now we're going to go create quicksand, and now we're going to create sandbox. And it's the same guys who are designing the best courses in the world, period. And they give those courses as much attention, even though they're, you know, sandbox is 17 par three holes, as they do the big courses. So when you play them, you don't feel like you're getting less than. And for me, you know, given my advancing age and my physical frailty and my lack of mental acuity, all of those things, plus playing 100-year-old clubs, because why not? To have the opportunity to play the sandbox with you guys was just, that was a joy. That was, if you said to me, what were your two favorite hours of all the hours of golf, I would say it was the Sandbox. For all that it encompassed for me, it was the Sandbox.
I can agree with that. And it started out with one of the great, great jokes of all time that Joe Sass orchestrated as you and Chris showed up in your T-shirts. And
wait, you mean the king of pranksters, Joe Sass?
King of pranksters, Joe Sass. Asked the starter kid to just basically tell you guys you couldn't play in your T-shirts. And the people can go look it up. We've got it on the socials. But it just one of the all time greats. And your reaction, God, and Joe and amazing. I just trying to stop laughing.
I'll quickly give the backstory, which is what made it funny, which was I had been talking about the places that you can play where you can play in a T-shirt,
right,
and play barefoot and listen to music and whatever. You know, sometimes they let you out as an eightsome. They don't care.
Sure. Right.
And I went through this whole thing about being able to wear a T-shirt and how much I was looking forward to it. And you three were up there by yourselves and I came walking up last. And there was this youngish kind of starter kid that Joe had already gotten to. And I walked up and he was perfect. He did not break a smile, nothing. Looked right in the eyes and said, Mitch, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm afraid you can't play here in a T-shirt. Totally straight face.
And Chris in the video is like, is that real?
Is that real? Is that real?
And I spin around and I look around and I'm behind me, of course, Sass is just hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
He's just... Yeah. So, and then the kid broke and, you know, I realized it was Joe, but it was funny. And the day started that way. And then indeed you walk around barefoot, you hit shots into beautiful greens.
Yep.
It's a marvel.
They really encourage the barefoot. That's not, not just something we decided to do. Like when you show up on that first tee, there are shoes lined up on the tee where people have just slipped out of their shoes and like, okay, I'm going to play barefoot.
Yep.
You know, and that's how you do it. That's how it should be. And that is what that kind of golf is, what's going to keep the game propelling to a point where people love to play it and then are willing to pay the higher rates to play the big courses and big resorts and all the things that keep the golf industry moving forward.
Yep.
So. Yep.
I think it'd be a great idea in thinking about it to just build a resort of par three courses.
Oh,
I mean, really, like,
why am I not working on that idea right now?
No, but it just hit me just now. Why, if there's one course like the Sandbox or the Preserve or Quicksand or whatever, and people react the way they do, or the Cradle in Pinehurst, why not have a resort that's strictly five great par three courses by five different designers?
I love it.
I mean, that just hit me like a ton of friggin' bricks.
Wow.
I'm dizzy. I'm woozy. I need another shot of larceny.
Everybody has one great idea in a lifetime, and that is yours right there.
I wish I had enough money to make that one idea of a lifetime.
Golly, we're going to have to find somebody to do that.
All right. Well, let's get on. Anyway.
Let's say this. The other thing about the Sandbox is it is right next to the first tee is a makeshift building that they have put up. And called Green River Barbecue. Mm-hmm. And when we finished up, we walked off and we walked right into the barbecue. We had brisket and pulled pork and mac and cheese and cornbread and all the good stuff. And it's one of those things that you got to do. Not just when you play a Sandbox, you got to at least stop in the Green River one time while you're on this trip. And what I realized is the Kaiser family has really started to embrace barbecue and in a magnificent way, finding people who can do really good barbecue. When I went to Bandon, now at the new practice facility they have, which is really fantastic at Bandon Dunes, they have a barbecue food truck out there. And in between rounds on my recent trip, I blew over there. It's only open for lunch. And so I got over there just a couple of minutes before it was closing. And I got these big slabs of brisket and some pulled pork and all the good stuff, and just kind of sat there, watched people hitting balls. And so I think we're going to see more and more of this. We're seeing more and more food trucks at golf courses, which I think is a brilliant thing. And but if you just like barbecue, the Kaisers are going to keep adding barbecue, I would assume, to almost every one of their new properties. And you know, it's just another thing you have to add. And it's why you would think we would weigh an extra 20, 30 pounds when we're done with these things. But you're doing so much walking at these destination golf courses that, you know, it's like when we go to Scotland and we think, oh man, all I'm doing is eating Mars bars and sticky toffee pudding. You know, I'm going to be 100 pounds heavier. And then I come back and I've lost 10 pounds. So, you know, it's one of those things though, but barbecue, Green River Barbecue at Sand Valley and the new barbecue food truck at Bandon are things that everybody who's traveling those places ought to check out.
Well, agreed. I think we agree. Hands up over here. All right, let's move to, so we've talked about Sand Valley, Mammoth Dunes and Sandbox, and the Lido is, when I said that there's literally nothing else like it, I meant it before. For those of you that don't know, and I don't know that there's a quick way to do this, I'll just do it as quickly as I can. There was a golf course that was opened in 1917 on Long Island that was designed by C.B. McDonald. And at the time, it was considered on the same level as Royal Dornoch, as Pine Valley, as Shinnecock, as National Golf Links. In other words, a world-class golf course. Then the Depression hit. And it really fell into disrepair and never came back. And along came World War II, and the Navy decided they needed the land from the Lido course for preparation work and working with the Navy guys for World War II. So they took over what was the Lido course, and it was gone. And it was called for a number of years the Lost Course. And I'm shortening this up a lot. It's a fascinating story. But over time, the idea of this great golf course on Long Island was floating around in the netherworld until all of a sudden it started to kind of make a comeback. And the real, again, this is a shortcut, but Michael and Chris Kaiser, Mike Kaiser's two sons, they had heard about the Lido and the ideas of the Lido, and then they read a book about C.B. McDonald and his life and his courses, and the Lido grabbed him even more. And then COVID hit, and Michael was the one that kind of went deeper down the rabbit hole. Turns out there's a guy named Peter Flory, who's a financial guy and a golf historian, who also loved the Lido. And he loved it so much that he created a really detailed version of the Lido in a video game called the Golf Course.
Yep.
And the Golf Club, sorry. And he creates this digital fingerprint, basically, of the golf course. And he and, over time, Michael and Chris talk to their father, Mike. And, you know, they all feel like, okay, at first they actually thought about doing this at Bandon, about trying to recreate the Lido at Bandon. But sure. Then they decided, we've got this land at Sand Valley, which is absolutely perfect. And the beauty of the Lost Course was that because when they built the original Lido, this flipped me out. When they built the original Lido, because it was all marshland on the edge of Long Island, to build it, they had to bring in 2 million cubic yards of sand. Think about that. 1917, yeah. 2 million cubic yards of sand to create the golf course. Well,
that's a lot of shoveling.
Yeah. Where Sand Valley is, it's called Sand Valley for a reason. So yeah. They didn't have to bring that in. So they take the digital fingerprint that was used by Flory. They get it to Tom Doak. And I so love this. And they decide that they can actually recreate the exact dimensions of the Lido. And I'm not talking like, well, that's about 20 yards over there. I'm talking to the millimeter. Yep. They can create the exact measurements of the Lido, everything, the bunkers, the greens, the fairway widths, all the measurements. And they program those digital fingerprints into GPS systems on tractors that are used to build the Lido at Sand Valley. So all they do is put the measurements in, The operators then get on the tractors, make sure everything's okay, and the tractors build the golf course. So the bottom line is, when you're there, and this is what flipped me out, because I think all of us had known enough about it to be intrigued by what we were going to find. So this is just my hit, and then you guys give yours. I was in, and you have to walk. There's no carts allowed on the Lido yet.
Yeah.
So I had to walk, which was not an easy chore for me. So I only wound up doing the front nine. But what I felt like being there and walking and playing, not only is the golf course, which is pretty amazing. I mean, just as a golf course to play, it's amazing. The hazards, the features, all the things about the Lido are phenomenal. But the extra dimension for me of knowing the backstory and realizing that as you're playing, you're literally walking the same golf course that C.B. McDonald built, and this is the exact number, 1,226 miles away from where you're playing. That is what really put me over the top. And yeah. It took it to the one thing that I want to do is go back and play the whole course. Now, like you said, Darren, I want to get back.
Yeah. And it's so technological in how it came about, but it does not feel like that in any way, shape, or form. It just feels like this completely organic golf course experience that came out of the mind of a great architect. And it's just... it has a vibe to it that is different than anything else on the property. It's super, super cool in that respect.
Yeah.
That's something that really, that I left with too, is like, I don't know how they did that, but you're totally right, Darren. It had a, like, I don't know how they did it, but the vibe is just, it feels like it's like you are in the past, but also, like you said, this, it's a very natural, nothing is out of place in the, on the course. It has those same sort of little details to it. You remember the water bottles, Darren, that we just absolutely loved?
Yeah.
Like, do you want a water bottle? Like, yeah. And they just gave us a water bottle, and it's got the great logo on it. And then on the course, they've got the, the water,
pumping wells.
The water pumps. Yeah. That was just excellent. Yeah, it just felt very natural, and it was just another really, really fun golf course. I think Joe and I think we played our best rounds of the trip on that one. We had great caddies too that were really good and really fun. That was a great round of golf on a fantastic, really significant golf course.
Joe definitely played his best round, and it's. You know, it's in its infancy, so it's still growing in. It's going to mature from a turf standpoint. It's going to become, they're going to figure out the pathways for walking to make it a little bit of an easier walk. It was tough walking through a lot of the sand. You know, one of the reasons why Mitch only played nine was just the walk was it's a little difficult in some spots, but that stuff's all going to get settled. What I found interesting are these, these glimpses of template holes we've seen at so many other golf courses, all these different shots that you play throughout this 18 holes, just make you think. And again, like we've said with all the others, it has those holes I want to go back and conquer. I didn't particularly play well that day. And so, I walked off going, man, I wish we could get another round. And when we played it, you could only play once per trip. Mm-hmm. So, and it was super hard to even get that tee time. But if I went back, I would definitely probably do it twice. If I was allowed to, so that we could, you could get that, you can begin to get familiar with it. It's like, it's more than any of the other courses at Sand Valley. It's like we talk about with other places, be that Tobacco Road or other courses we've been, where the first time around you're just getting to know each other, and then you kind of know what you're doing, so you can become more aggressive. You can figure out the spots where where you want to stay away from trouble or you want to tackle trouble. And it's at the top of my list of places I want to get back to, sometime in the next 2 years and kind of see the strides that golf course has taken, in addition to everything else that's going on in Sand Valley.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, the routing too was something that was really unique. Joe hit at the wrong green at one point because of the holes. Because it is an old course, right? So it's tight and greens are right next to each other and fairways are right next to each other. And that's one of those things where the next time, we go, we're all going to joke about it, but he's going to know where to go, with his second shot. And just like when we close out our round on 18, you walk through 9.
Get
back to the clubhouse.
To the clubhouse.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like it's very unique and different that way. And it just felt significant. That's probably part of the reason.
Very old world linksy golf.
Yeah.
Mentality in that respect. And Joe hit it to the wrong green and then still didn't lose the hole, by the way. Right.
that says more about your golf than Joe's. Yeah.
I parred that hole and I hit to the wrong fairway.
It can't be. And again, like we talked about, Sand Valley and Mammoth are so different. The Lido is another animal. As Mitch loves when I say, a whole nother thing. It's like different on an extreme level from what the other two courses and how they're different. And, again, that just makes for this. Now it's a 1-2-3 punch. As opposed to the 1-2 punch. And it's a whole combination that you're going to get so many different looks at shots and golf holes if you play Sand Valley, Mammoth Dunes, and the Lido on a trip that your head might explode.
And standing at that first tee box, you can see the entire course.
The entire course.
Yeah.
Yep. You can see the whole thing, which is incredible.
Well, literally the only difference is you're in Nakusa, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And there's no Atlantic.
Right.
But otherwise, it's the same thing people saw when they stood on the first tee on Long Island.
Yeah.
They saw the whole golf course. Wild. And that continually during the time I was on that golf course came back to me.
Yeah.
It's like it goes through your cells. It is otherworldly. And the other, I'll just close this by saying that we know Tom Doak. We know Tom Doak courses, other courses. We know Tom Doak's sometimes, how can I put this mildly? Sometimes he has an opinion of himself and his work that is very high, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
When they asked him about doing the Lido, he said repeatedly, I am not doing anything here. I am simply a shepherd to recreate what has been done before.
Yep.
And as soon as I read that, I thought that just, the respect that he was showing, obviously, for C.B. McDonald, he was literally just making sure it was what it could be.
Yep.
And bravo.
Yep.
He did it with a guy named Brian Schneider. I don't want to leave him out of it either. It was the two of them together.
Let me say this too. I meant to mention this earlier when I mentioned Lac La Belle. Craig Haltom designed Lac La Belle. Craig Haltom is the reason. He's a guy I've mentioned up before on the podcast. I went to Australia with him on a trip and met him for the first time. But he's the reason Sand Valley exists. Craig is the guy he's the guy who found the property. He and his wife were hiking. He came up on this property and he went to the Kaisers and said, and the way I've heard the story is, the Kaisers were only wanting to build golf, oceanfront golf at the time. And Craig said, look, this is all sand and there's no water right here, but it's everything else that you get on a Lynx property, except the ocean. The ocean here is just more sand, as opposed to being actual water. And so when you think about it in that respect, that right next door to where they built this is just more sand in this sand valley, instead of the Atlantic, it makes perfect sense in the same way that building the original Sand Valley course made sense, even though it wasn't on the Pacific or the Atlantic or some other body of water. And so Craig has really, when we mentioned Craig's porch, where you get the dollar tacos and the $3 beers, Craig's Porch is named after Craig Haltom. And, you know, I just don't want to leave him out of this. We're hoping to have Craig on the podcast at some point to talk specifically about Lac La Belle, you know, and one of these special editions that we're looking at doing in the future. But I just wanted to make sure he got a shout out in there, because it's very possible none of this happens if Craig doesn't stumble upon this property while he's hiking one day.
Man, right. It's quite the legacy.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. I'm going to kind of wind us up here with just one special hour. And apart from everything else that's special at Sand Valley, which we've already talked about, when you go to the Lido, there's someone there that you have to, and when I say have to, I mean have to, you have to at least say hi to. I got the chance to spend an hour or more with Clark Willard. And the reason that he's such an important part of the Sand Valley experience to me, and when I really thought about it this morning leading up to this podcast, I realized that for me, and obviously the time with you guys and the golf and everything else, but up near the top of the list was the hour I got to spend with Clark, who is now the head professional at the Lido. I first heard about him because Golfer's Journal, the great quarterly magazine and now production company, did a film, a feature, kind of short feature on Clark. And it was the first time I had heard anything about him. And I was drawn to it because it had to do with hickories, not just the Lido course, but hickories. And so I kind of watched this feature. And by the end of it, I'm a sobbing mess because Clark was the first head pro, slated to be the first head pro at Sand Valley for the original Sand Valley course when it opened. He had worked his way, went and did an internship out at Bandon, met the Kaisers. First day there, met his future wife, who was from Nakusa. And later on, when he found out that they were doing Sand Valley, he said to her, "Do you think they might have an opening for me?" And said he was willing to move back there. And he and now his wife did. And he got some work at Sand Valley and then was slated about a year later to be the head professional and was unbelievably excited. Has a half day off as an outdoorsman, loved surfing and fishing and ATV riding. So he gets on his ATV. It's the first ride of the season. He said he was going as fast as he could on it and hit some wet spots. It was in fifth gear and it just took off and up in the air he went and the ATV went into the trees of the forest. And in that instant, he said all he wanted to do was get up, get home, because he wanted to get to work the next day. He didn't want to let his team down. They finally took him and they said, you can't do that. They take him to the hospital. Long story short, turns out he's, you know, broken a bone in his neck. He's fractured his hip and pelvis so badly that he couldn't do anything. He couldn't lift his arms. He basically couldn't move. And he was millimeters away from being a quadriplegic. He was, you know, a second away from dying, but then millimeters away from being quadriplegic. So he has surgery. And the reason that it's so moving to me is not just the story, but the person that Clark Willard is. When you are in his presence, you literally, if you're just sitting there talking to Clark, you are inspired. You are uplifted, not by some phony thing he's saying, but I have never really been around the energy of somebody like Clark. It's the only way I can put it. And if you watch the video in Golfer's Journal, it's called Clark's Journey, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So he works his way back. He has surgery, goes through all the rehab of learning to do everything from scratch, literally. He said, not just walk, not just move, wipe my ass, everything from scratch. So over time, he starts getting better. Everybody supports him. And one day, a friend of his from Bandon calls him and says, I know you're probably feeling like there's not much going on, so I'm going to send you some hickories. And I really think you should kind of work with them and see if you can refinish them a little bit. So he sends him the hickories, and Clark said it literally gave him something to live for at that point. It gave him a goal. It gave him something. So he starts refurbishing and restoring Hickory's. He's got a little workspace, which is now turned into this incredible passion, which he calls the Hickory Revival. You can find him on Instagram at Hickory Revival. And so I'm sitting. Anyway, he gets to a point where as he gets better and he's now 100% fine, he says, I wanted to then play the Hickory's I was restoring. When could I walk one hole? When could I walk 18 holes? And then he took that further. And what he does at the Lido, he's got Hickory's in his office as like a little workshop. And when you go there, he would like nothing more than for you to go in and sit with him and learn about some clubs and take them out and play with them. And he says to him, that's the thing right now, other than shepherding the Lido as the head pro, that's the thing that makes him happier than almost anything, is seeing the light go off. And he's teaching kids, he's teaching groups, he's teaching women, he's teaching high handicap golfers. And so anyway, I'm sorry I kind of got running away with this, but it was such a powerful, he was such a powerful kind of expression of, to me, what all of Sand Valley is, everything we've talked about.
Yep.
Is the most giving and gracious and fun kind of guy. And it really, really blew me away. And then he's the one that he offered to drive me back to the Sand Valley clubhouse in his truck. So we get in the truck. And I said, I could just get the shuttle. He says, nah, not a chance. Come on. And he throws me in his truck. And we start driving around all these kind of back places. And then he said, okay, I'm going to take you out here. And he drives through a bunch of trees and boom, we're in the middle of Sedge Valley, the new Doak course. And so we drive around a couple holes there and it is gorgeous in there. And it, like we've talked about, all the different kinds of golf you can play.
Yeah.
From what I could see, and it was only a couple holes, Sedge Valley is, on the surface of it, much gentler than the other courses. It's a very almost peaceful looking place.
Right.
But you could tell that it's going to be a shot maker's challenge. The greens, the two greens I saw were domed, you know, generous runoff areas. You can play out of them. They're not incredibly looking penal areas, but the surrounds down the fairway, the edges of the fairway, and just really, really beautiful. I felt like I said to Clark, I want to get out of the truck and I just want to go and stand in the middle of that fairway right now. That was the feeling I had. I just wanted to be in there. So I think that course is going to add immeasurably to what they have at Sand Valley already. And like I said, if you have a chance to let Clark Willard know you're coming and you'd love to meet him, which is what I did before I went, he'll be right there. Yep. It's the cherry on top of the incredible ice cream sundae that is Sand Valley.
I met Clark on my original trip when we were just there and played Sand Valley. And, you know, it's interesting. Golf is a small, 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 small world. We find ourselves talking at the time about Pacific Gales way back then. Mm-hmm. And both Clark and Chelsea had worked at Bandon. And right. So they had surfed in Port Orford. And wow. It was like, okay, so, you know, that and it's really that, I think it's that that energy that you mentioned, Mitch. He's had that all along. Like, yep. I noticed it the first time I ever spoke a word to him. You know, and I think that's the energy that saved his life, you know, that got him back to where he was, because he's always had it. And he was able to call upon that, you know, when he was at his lowest and you know, on the road to recovery. Funny Hickory story. When we played that day, I had too many Hickories in the bag and I put some of them. They were operating out of a storage container, basically, for the golf shop at that time. And I went inside and I gave four of my Hickories to Clark to put behind the desk. And after we had played, we hopped in the car. It was me and Brian and Eric and Dylan. We hopped in the car and we take off. We get 10, 15 minutes down the road. And I'm like, left my Hickories at Sand Valley. We got to turn around. So we go rolling back. I go walking in there. Clark's just there with a smile, you know, He's got my hickories. I'm like, oh, I almost left him for you. So it's so funny that I had this hickory moment with him way back when. And now, I mean, he's surpassed us all in how he works on them and everything he's doing for hickories and just how he's using them for, you know, just the betterment of the game, which is always something we've envisioned, you know, all along of why we play hickories and how they adds this extra element to everything about golf that we love. So. Yeah,
totally agree. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up.
I got one other small world thing. Like golf is a crazy small world. You mentioned Pete Flory and I mentioned this connection between Port Orford and Clark and Chelsea. Pete Flory is one of two financial guys who's trying to get Pacific Gales built as well. So like I knew a little bit about all this he was working on with the Lido. Dave Essler, who's the architect on Pacific Gales, had told me about the video game aspect that Pete had done and everything. And now I'm on the team with him, trying to still get Pacific Gales built someday. So it's just, it's crazy how all the different connections, you know, going back to the way you and I met, the way we met Chris, all these different things, just connections in golf are so, so amazing. And I really thought it was special that we can make new connections and renew old connections at Sand Valley. I think that's what these pilgrimages, as you said, are really all about. And, hope we do another one soon.
We have to. That's not a hope.
Yep.
So I love when I watched the Golfer's Journal piece on Clark. He said when he got out to Pacific Dunes and he was in heaven because he could surf and he loved golf and whatever. And he said either the first day or one of the first few days he got there, he saw Chelsea and he said to whoever he was with, "Who's the hippie girl?" And it turns out that literally changed his life.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of guy he is. He's just a blast. Anyway, this has been a blast. I think if you're listening to this and you've listened all the way through, you can tell we've missed talking to each other.
Yeah, definitely.
For real, man. For real.
I was just sitting here thinking this is – I do love doing this. So I'm really, really glad that we took the trip and are able to talk about it, and I can't wait to do it again whenever we decide to.
I would guess that our new number one fan, JoJo, is the only guy who listens all the way through 90-plus minutes of this thing.
Okay, so picture this, if you will, and I have to get back as I'm talking. I'm sitting – not to humble brag, but – I'm sitting in Rome going to the Ryder Cup.
Did you go to Rome and go to the Ryder Cup?
Yeah. So I'm sitting in Rome and I get on my phone one morning and this is, I go to Twitter because I refuse to call it the other thing. I go to Twitter and I get a message from somebody and I really didn't recognize it. And the message basically says, "Dear Mitch, I have listened to, I'm an avid golfer and I'm a big fan of playing new courses. And I've listened to all 183 episodes of you and Darren on Talking Golf Getaways. And thank you so much for inspiring me." And I mean, it just went on and I'm sitting and I said to my wife, to Ava, this is unbelievable. And as Darren said, Chris and Darren and me haven't listened to all 180. Now, granted, we did most of them, but, you know, it's not like we said, this guy has listened to all 183 and can't wait to hear this one. I've already clued him in. His name is JoJo Subito. Hi, JoJo. You can find him on Twitter at jsubido, SUBIDO1. And he lives in the Philippines.
That's awesome.
In the Philippines. And he's been to the States. He's played here a couple times and he said he can't wait to get back and be inspired to play other places. I'd say if you want to talk about a pilgrimage to a destination, coming from the Philippines to the States to play is one of them. Anyway,
that
thanks,
qualifies.
JoJo. Thanks, JoJo. We appreciate you, man. All right, guys. I guess that's it. Darren, I know you and Joe. And thanks, Joe. We should really be serious for a second. Thanks to Joe for being an unbelievable housemate and friend and adding immeasurably to what were great days in Sand Valley. without you, really, without him, it just would have been you and me and Chris.
That's right.
Which would have been great, but it would have missed the prankster element, which was a big part of it. Anyway, you and Joe, I know you wanted to talk about Lac La Belle. So I'm sure at some point, maybe you and Joe can have some fun and talk about it and tell us about Eric Hart. Cause I know you want to do a upcoming podcast with Eric.
Yeah. We'll have Eric on sometime here in the off season, to talk about, like I said, the Graham Marsh designed Wild Marsh, outside Minneapolis. Eric has just done a fantastic job with the golf experience there. Just the top to bottom, and I couldn't be more proud of him. We want to talk about everything that's kind of gone into his decision there, from redesigning the logo, adding, you know, new merch and apparel and all that kind of thing. Plus a great little restaurant and bar that they run upstairs. And the golf course is just a lot of fun as well. So, you know, if you're in that neck of the woods, so to speak, up outside Minneapolis, you should definitely check out Wild Marsh. And we'll do a whole episode with Eric here pretty soon.
All right, cool. All right, dudes. I can't say it again. I love you guys, and I'm grateful as can be that we get to spend time together and talk about it and just live the life that we all live. So thanks for it. You know, what's interesting, I was just thinking about this. I was looking at my bookshelf, and there's a book staring at me. You talk about the little connections there. And there's a book called Dream Golf that I know you're familiar with, about the creation of Abandoned Dunes, and it's... I'm looking at it and I'm thinking about the Kaisers and Sand Valley and dreams. And we've all been lucky to kind of live that life. So, all right, turn it up, Chris. Let Tom Petty talk to us, man. Hope you all keep running down your dreams.